The awestruck oboe wonder at the vista. Christopher Cowie, principal oboist, taking a bow there. Alison Teal, cor anglais. Julie Price, principal bassoon. James Burke, leading the clarinets this evening, and principal flautist Michael Cox. The whole of the woodwind section on their feet now. And all those horns, that's Martin Owen, principal horn, leading 12 offstage horns, the whole section on the platform at least, on their feet. Alan Thomas leading the trumpets. Helen Verlam, principal trombonist. Well, Semyon Bychkov back next month in London to conduct Mozart's Così fan tutte at the Royal Opera House. And then he'll be back with this orchestra in October, leading three Tchaikovsky programmes. That cheer there for the percussionists of the orchestra, who have had a mighty busy evening. In the Alpine Symphony and in the work, the Second Symphony of Thomas Lacher, that we started the programme this evening. If you missed that, do make time to catch up with it on the BBC Proms website. Really one of the, well, for my money, most exciting new works we've heard at the Proms this year. The whole orchestra standing now. Time for us to bid you good night. Jill Anderson is at Broadcasting House. Will tell us in a moment about what's at the Proms tomorrow. But for now, goodbye.
Thank you, Petrock. That was Petrock Trelawney at the Royal Albert Hall. Well, we've three visits to the Proms tomorrow. The first starts at 11 o'clock in the morning. Katie Derham will be introducing the BBC Concert Orchestra and the conductor Jessica Cottis, together with familiar faces from CBeebies, for a family musical journey with music by Beethoven, Korngold, Prokofiev, Richard Strauss and Peter Maxwell Davis. Then our Proms Chamber Music Concert is at 1 o'clock. The Armida Quartet, who are current new generation artists, will be playing Schubert's Quartet Satz. They'll be joined by a former new generation artist, the viola player Lise Berteau, in Mozart's String Quintet in C. And Lise Berteau and the pianist David Soudebray will also be giving the world premiere of Merula Perpetua, written for them by Sally Beamish. And in the evening,
Beethoven. And nothing but Beethoven. The historic Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra, the conductor Herbert Blomstedt and pianist Andras Schiff perform some of Beethoven's best-loved works at the Proms. His Seventh Symphony, Second Leonora Overture, and the Emperor Piano Concerto. Join me, Martin Handley, tomorrow evening at 7:30, live on BBC Radio 3.
And the time now is 10:04. Time for Drama on 3. Henry VIII succeeded to the throne in 1509 and was to reign for nearly 40 years and to marry six times. But it was his struggle to annul his marriage to Catherine of Aragon and the support he received in this from his Chancellor, Cardinal Wolsey, which was ultimately to result in his lasting legacy, the break from Rome. The murky world of Tudor religion, politics and sex is the subject matter of Shakespeare's last play, written in collaboration with John Fletcher. With Matthew Marsh as Henry, Patrick Malahide as Cardinal Wolsey and Yolanda Vasquez as Catherine, this evening's production of Henry VIII opens on the stage of the Globe Theatre in 1613.
I come no more to make you laugh. Things now that bear a weighty and a serious brow, sad, high, and working, full of state and woe, such noble scenes as draw the eye to flow, we now present. Those that can pity here may, if they think it well, let fall a tear. The subject will deserve it. Think ye see the very persons of our noble story as they were living? Think you see them great and followed with the general throng and sweat of 1,000 friends? Then in a moment see how soon this mightiness meets misery. And if you can be merry then, I'll say, a man may weep upon his wedding day.
See this delivered. Go in haste.
Your Grace.
Good morrow, Norfolk. Say, how have you done since last we met in France?
I thank your Grace, healthful, and ever since a fresh admirer of what I saw there.
An untimely ague stayed me a prisoner in my chamber when those sons of glory, those two lights of men, met in the Vale of Andres.
Oh, then you lost the view of earthly glory, Buckingham. Till this time, pomp was single, but now married to one above itself. Today the French, all clinkant, all in gold, like heathen gods, shone down the English. And tomorrow they made Britain India. Every man that stood showed like a mine. Their dwarfish pages were as cherubims, all gilt. The two kings, equal in luster, were now best, now worst, as presence did present them. Him in eye, still him in praise. And being present both, 'twas said they saw but one. And no discerner durst wag his tongue in censure.
Who did guide? I mean, who set the body and the limbs of this great sport together, as you guess?
All this was ordered by the good discretion of the Right Reverend Cardinal of York.
The devil speed him. No man's pie is freed from his ambitious finger. What has Wolsey to do in these fierce vanities? I wonder that such a keech can, with his very bulk, take up the rays of the beneficial sun and keep it from the earth.
Surely, sir, there's in him stuff that puts him to these ends. For being not propped by ancestry whose grace chalks successes their way, but spider-like out of his self-drawing web he gives us note, the force of his own merit makes his way a gift that heaven gives for him which buys a place next to the king. Is it not so, Lord Abergany?
I cannot tell, sir, what heaven hath given him. Let some graver eye pierce into that. But I can see his pride peep through each part of him. Whence has he that, if not from hell?
Why the devil, upon this French going out, took he upon him, without the privity of the king, to appoint who should attend on him? He makes up the file of all the gentry. For the most part, such to whom as great a charge as little honour he meant to lay upon.
And I do know kinsmen of mine, three at the least, that have by this so sickened their estates that never they shall abound as formerly.
Oh, many have broke their backs with laying debts upon them for this great journey.
The peace between the French and us not values the course that did conclude at Buckingham. For France hath broke the league and hath attached our merchants' goods at Bordeaux.
Oh, a proper title of a peace. Purchased at a superfluous rate.
Why, all this business our Reverend Cardinal carried.
You know his nature, that he's revengeful. And I know his sword hath a sharp edge. It's long, and it may be said it reaches far. And where 'twill not extend, thither he darts it. Bosom up my counsel. You'll find it wholesome. Lo. Where comes that rock that I advise your shunning?
The Duke of Buckingham's surveyor, eh? Where's his deposition?
Here, Sir, please, you.
Is he in person ready?
Aye, please, Your Grace.
Well, we shall then know more. And Buckingham shall lessen his big look.
This butcher's cur is venom-mouthed, and I have no power to muzzle him. I read in's looks matter against me. And his eye reviled me as his abject object. At this instant he bores me with some trick. unto the king, and from a mouth of honour, quite crying down this Ipswich fellow's insolence, or proclaim this difference in no persons.
Heat not a furnace for your foes so hot that it do singe yourself. Be advised.
My thanks to you. But this top-proud fellow I do know to be corrupt and treasonous.
Say not treasonous.
To the king I'll say it, and make my vouch as strong as shore of rock. Attend. This holy fox, only to show his pomp as well in France as here at home, suggests the king our master to this last costly treaty, the interview that swallowed so much treasure and like a glass did break the rinsing.
Faith, and so it did.
Pray, give me favour, sir. This cunning cardinal, the articles of the combination drew, is himself pleased, and they were ratified as he cried, thus let be, to as much end as give a crutch to the dead. But our Count Cardinal has done this, and 'tis well, for worthy Wolsey, who cannot err, he did it. Now this follows. Charles the Emperor here makes visitation. His fears were that the interview betwixt England and France might, through their amity, breed him some prejudice, for from this league peeped harms that menaced him. He privily deals with our cardinal, but when the way was made and paved with gold, the emperor thus desired Wolsey would please to alter the king's course and break the foresaid peace. Let the king know, as soon he shall by me, that thus the cardinal does buy and sell his honour as he pleases and for his own advantage.
I am sorry to hear this of him, and could wish you were something mistaken in.
No, not a syllable. I do pronounce him in that very shape he shall appear in proof.
Your office, Sergeant. Execute it.
Sir, my lord the Duke of Buckingham and Earl of Hereford, Stafford and Northampton, I arrest thee of high treason in the name of our most sovereign king.
Lo you, my lord, the net has fallen upon me. I shall perish under device and practice.
I'm sorry to see you tame from liberty. To look on the business present, 'tis his highness' pleasure you shall to the tower.
It will help me nothing to plead mine innocence, for that dye is on me which makes my whitest part black. The will of heaven be done in this and all things. I obey. Oh, my lord Abergenny, fare you well.
Nay, he must bear you company. The king is pleased you shall to the tower, till you know how he determines further.
As the duke said, the will of heaven be done. And the king's pleasure by me obeyed.
Here is a warrant from the king to attach Lord Montacute, and the bodies of the Duke's confessor, John de la Court, one Gilbert Park, his chancellor.
So, these are the limbs of the plot. No more, I hope.
A monk of the Chartreux.
Oh, Nicholas Hopkins.
He.
My surveyor is false. The all-great cardinal hath showed him gold. My life is spanned already. I am the shadow of poor Buckingham, whose figure even this instant cloud puts on by darkening my clear sun. My lords, farewell.
Lord Cardinal, a word.
His Majesty.
My life itself, and the best heart of it, thanks you for this great care. I stood in the level of a full-charged confederacy, and give thanks to you that choked it.
We must not stint our necessary actions in the fear to cope malicious censurers.
Let be called before us that gentleman of Buckingham's. In person, I'll hear him his confessions justify, and point by point the treasons of his master he shall again relate.
Room for the Queen there, and my lord the Duke of Norfolk. Her Majesty Queen Catherine.
Gentle Catherine, I prithee rise.
Nay, we must longer kneel. I am a suitor.
Arise and take place by us. Half your suit never named to us. You have half our power. The other moiety, ere you ask, is given. Repeat your will and take it.
Thank your Majesty. That you would love yourself and in that love not unconsidered leave your honour nor the dignity of your office is the point of my petition.
Lady mine, proceed.
I am solicited, not by a few, and those of true condition, that your subjects are in great grievance. There have been commissions set down among them which hath flawed the heart of all their loyalties, wherein, although, my good Lord Cardinal, they vent reproaches most bitterly on you as putter on of these exactions, yet the King our Master, whose honour heaven shield from soil, Even he escapes not language unmannerly, yet such which breaks the sides of loyalty and almost appear in loud rebellion.
Not almost appears, it doth appear. For upon these taxations, the clothiers all, not able to maintain the many to them longing, have put off the spinsters, carders, fullers, weavers, who, unfit for other life, compelled by hunger and lack of other means, in desperate manner, daring the event to the teeth, are all in uproar, and danger serves among them.
Taxation? Wherein? And what taxation? My lord cardinal, you that are blamed for it alike with us, know you of this taxation?
Please you, sir, I know but of a single part in all pertains to the state, and front but in that file where others tell steps with me.
No, my lord, you know no more than others. But you frame things that are known alike, which are not wholesome to those which would not know them, and yet must perforce be their acquaintance. These exactions whereof my sovereign would have note, they are most pestilent to the hearing, and to bear 'em, the back is sacrificed to the load. They say they are devised by you.
Still, exaction, the nature of it. In what kind, let's know, is this exaction?
I am much too venturous in tempting of your patience, but emboldened under your promised pardon. The subject's grief comes through commissions which compel from each the sixth part of his substance to be levied without delay. And the pretense for this is named your wars in France. This makes bold mouths, tongues spit their duties out, and cold hearts freeze allegiance in them. Their curses now live where their prayers did. And it's come to pass, this tractable obedience is a slave to each incensed will. I would your highness would give it quick consideration, for there is no primer business.
By my life, this is against our pleasure.
And for me, I have no further gone in this than by a single voice, and that not past me, but by learned approbation of the judges. If I am traduced by ignorant tongues, which neither know my faculties nor person, yet will be the chronicles of my doing. Let me say, 'tis but the fate of plays, and the rough break that virtue must go through. If we stand still in fear, our motion will be mocked or carped at. We should take root here where we sit, or sit state statues only.
Things done well and with a care exempt themselves from fear. Things done without example in their issue are to be feared. Have you a precedent of this commission? I believe not any. We must not rend our subjects from our laws and stick them in our will. Sixths part of each, a trembling contribution. To every county where this is questioned, send our letters with free pardon to each man that has denied the force of this commission. Pray look to it. I put it to your care.
Secretary, let there be letters writ to every shire of the king's grace and pardon. The grieved commons hardly conceive of me. Let it be noised that through our intercession this revokement and pardon comes. I shall have none advise you further in the proceeding.
Your Grace.
Your Majesty, I am sorry that the Duke of Buckingham is running your displeasure.
It grieves many. The gentleman is learned and a most rare speaker, to nature none more bound. His training such that he may furnish and instruct great teachers and never seek for aid out of himself. Yet see, when these so noble beneficial prove not well disposed, the mind growing once corrupt, they turn to vicious forms, 10 times more ugly than ever they were fair. This man, so complete, hath into monstrous habits put the graces that once were his, and is become as black as if besmeared in hell.
You were the Duke Surveyor?
I was, sir.
No.
Sit by us. You shall hear, this was his gentleman in trust, of him things to strike honour sad. Bid him recount the 4 recited practices whereof we cannot feel too little, hear too much.
Speak freely.
First, it was usual with him, every day it would infect his speech, that if the king should without issue die, he'll carry it so to make the sceptre his. These very words I've heard him utter to his son-in-law, Lord Abergany, to whom, by oath, he menaced revenge upon the cardinal.
Please your highness note this dangerous conception in this point. Not friended by his wish to your high person, His will is most malignant, and it stretches beyond you to your friends.
My learned Lord Cardinal, deliver all with charity.
Speak on. How grounded he his title to the crown upon our fail? To this point hast thou heard him at any time speak aught?
He was brought to this by a vain prophecy of Nicholas Hopkins.
What was that Hopkins?
Sir, a Chartres friar, his confessor, who fed him every minute with words of sovereignty.
How knowest thou this?
Not long before your highness sped to France, the Duke himself did of me demand what was the speech among the Londoners concerning the French journey. I replied, men feared the French would prove perfidious to the king's danger. Presently the Duke said 'twas the fear indeed, and that he doubted 'twould prove the verity of certain words spoke by a holy monk, that nor the king nor's heirs shall prosper. Bid him strive to gain the love of the commonalty, and the Duke shall govern England.
If I know you well, you were the Duke's surveyor and lost your office on the complaint of the tenants. Take good heed you charge not in your spleen a noble person and spoil your nobler soul. I say take heed. Yes, heartily. Beseech you.
Let him on. Go forward.
On my soul, I'll speak but truth. I told my lord the Duke by the devil's illusions the monk might be deceived, and that 'twas dangerous for him to ruminate on this so far until it forged him some design, which, being believed, it was much like to do. He answered, tush, it can do me no damage, adding further that had the king in his last sickness failed, the cardinal's and Sir Thomas Lovell's heads should have gone off.
What, so rank? There's mischief in this man. Canst thou say further?
I can, my liege.
Proceed.
Being at Greenwich, after your highness had reproved the Duke about Sir William Bulmer...
I remember of such a time. Being my sworn servant, the Duke retained him his. But on, what hence?
If, quoth he, I for this had been committed, as to the tower, I thought, I would have played the part my father meant to act upon the usurper Richard, who, being at Salisbury, made suit to come in his presence, which, if granted, as he made semblance of his duty, would have put his knife into him.
A giant traitor!
No, madam. May his highness live in freedom, and this man out of prison.
God mend all.
There's something more would out of thee. What sayest?
After the Duke, his father, with the knife, he stretched him, and with one hand on his dagger, another spread on his breast, mounting his eyes, he did discharge a horrible oath, whose tenor was, were he evil used, he would outgo his father by as much as a performance does in a resolute purpose.
There's his period to sheathe his knife in us. He is attached. Call him to present trial. If he may find mercy in the law, 'tis his. If none, let him not seek of us. By day and night, he's traitor to the height.
Where are you going?
To the cardinal's. Your lordship is a guest too?
Oh, it is true. This night he makes a supper, and a great one, to many lords and ladies. There will be the beauty of this kingdom, I'll assure you.
That Wolsey bears a bounteous mind indeed. A hand as fruitful as the land that feeds us. His dues fall everywhere.
No doubt he's noble. He had a black mouth that said other of him.
He may, my lord, has wherewithal. In him sparing, whichever worse sin than ill doctrine, men of his way should be most liberal. They are set here for example.
True, they are so. But few now give so great ones. My barge stays. Your lordship shall along. Come, good Sir Thomas, we should be late else. Which I would not be, for I was spoke to with Sir Henry Guildford this night to be controllers.
I am your lordship's...
Ladies, a general welcome from His Grace salutes ye all. This night he dedicates to fair content and you. None here he hopes in all this noble bevy has brought with her one care abroad. He would have all as merry as first good company, good wine, good welcome can make good people. Oh, my lord, you're tardy. The very thought of this fair company clapped wings to me.
You are young, Sir Harry Guildford. Sweet ladies, will it please you sit? Sir Harry, place you that side. I'll take the charge of this. My Lord Sands, you're one who'll keep them waking. Pray sit between these ladies.
By my faith, and thank your lordship. By your leave, sweet ladies. If I chance to talk a little wild, forgive me. I had it from my father.
Was he mad, sir?
Oh, Very mad, exceeding mad, in love too. But he would bite none, just as I do now. He would kiss you 20 with a breath.
His Grace is entering.
Nay, you must not freeze. Two women placed together makes cold weather.
You're welcome, my fair guests. That noble lady or gentleman that is not freely merry is not my friend. This, to confirm my welcome, and to you all, good health.
Your Grace is noble. Let me have such a bowl may hold my thanks and save me so much talking.
My lord Sans, I am beholden to you. You cheer your neighbours. Ladies, you're not merry. Gentlemen, whose fault is this?
The red wine first must rise in their fair cheeks, my lord. Then we shall have them talk us to silence.
You're a merry gamester, my lord Sans.
Yes, if I make my play. Here's to your ladyship. And pledge it, madam, for 'tis to such a
thing. Oh, you cannot show me.
What's that?
Look out there, some of you.
What warlike voice and to what end is this? Oh, nay, ladies, fear not. By all the laws of war, you're privileged.
My lord.
What is it?
A noble troop of strangers, for so they seem. They've left their barge and landed, and hither make as great ambassadors from foreign princes.
Good Lord Chamberlain, go give them welcome. You can speak the French tongue, and pray receive them nobly, and conduct them into our presence, where this heaven of booty shall side at full upon them. Some attend him. You have now a broken banquet, but we'll mend it. A good digestion to you all, and once more I shower a welcome on ye. Welcome all. Bonsoir. A noble company. What are their pleasures?
Because they speak no English, thus they prayed to tell your grace that having heard by fame of this so noble and so fair assembly this night to meet here, they could do no less out of the great respect they bear to beauty but leave their flocks, and under your fair conduct crave leave to view these ladies and entreat an hour of revels with them.
Say, Lord Chamberlain, they have done my poor house grace, for which I pay him 1,000 thanks and pray him take their pleasure.
Ah, fair maid, will you dance with me?
What's she that follows here that would say no?
The fairest hand I ever touched. Oh, beauty, till now I never knew thee.
My lord Chamberlain.
Your grace.
Pray tell her thus much from me. There should be one amongst them by his person, more worthy this place than myself, to whom, if I but knew him, with my love and duty, I would surrender it.
I will, my lord.
What say they?
Such a one, they all confess, there is indeed, which they would have your grace find out, and he will take it.
Let me see then. By all your good leaves, gentlemen, here I'll make my royal choice. Ye have found him, Cardinal.
You hold a fair assembly. You do well, Lord. You are a churchman, or I'll tell you, Cardinal, I should judge now unhappily. Oh,
I am glad your grace has grown so pleasant.
My Lord Chamberlain, prithee come hither. What fair lady is that?
And please, your grace, Sir Thomas Bullen's daughter.
By heaven, she is a dainty one. Sweetheart, I were unmannerly to take you out and not to kiss you. A health, gentlemen, let it go round.
Sir Thomas Lovell, is the banquet ready in the privy chamber?
Yes, my lord.
Your grace, I fear, with dancing is a little heated.
I fear too much.
What is fresher air, my lord, in the next chamber?
Lead in your ladies, everyone. Sweet partner, I must not yet forsake you. Let's be merry. Good, my lord cardinal, I have half a dozen healths to drink to these fair ladies and a measure to lead them once again. and then let's dream who's best in favor. Let the music knock it!
Whither away so fast?
Oh, God save you. Even to the hall to hear what shall become of the great Duke of Buckingham.
Oh, I'll save you that labour, sir.
All's now done but the ceremony of bringing back the prisoner. The great Duke came to the bar, where to his accusations he pleaded still not guilty and alleged many sharp reasons to defeat the law. The king's attorney, on the contrary, urged on the examinations, proofs, confessions of divers witnesses, which the Duke desired to have brought viva voce to his face, and which appeared against him his surveyor, Sir Gilbert Park, his chancellor, and John Court, confessor to him, with that devil monk Hopkins that made this mischief.
That was he that fed him with his prophecies.
The same. All these accused him strongly, which he fain would have flung from him, but indeed he could not. And so his peers, upon this evidence, have found him guilty of high treason. Much he spoke, and learnedly for life, but all was either pitied in him or forgotten.
I do not think he fears death.
Oh, sure he does not. He never was so womanish. The cause he may a little grieve at.
Certainly. The cardinal is the end of this.
'Tis likely. For generally, whoever the king favours, the cardinal instantly will find employment, and far enough from court, too.
All the commons hate him perniciously, and on my conscience, wish him 10 fathom deep. This duke as much they love and dote on, call him bounteous Buckingham, the mirror of all courtesy.
Stay there, sir, and see the noble ruined man you speak of.
Let's stand close and behold him.
All good people, you that thus far have come to pity me, hear what I say and then go home and lose me. I have this day received a traitor's judgment, and by that name must die. Yet heaven bear witness, and if I have a conscience, let it sink me even as the axe falls, if I be not faithful. The law I bear no malice for my death. That's done upon the premises but justice. But those that sought it, I could wish more Christians. Be what they will, I heartily forgive them. Yet let them look, they glory not in mischief, nor build their evils on the graves of great men, for then my guiltless blood must cry against them. For further life in this world I ne'er hope, nor will I sue, although the king have mercies more than I dare make faults. You few that loved me, and dare be bold to weep for Buckingham, go with me like good angels to my end. And as the long divorce of steel falls on me, make of your prayers one sweet sacrifice, and lift my soul to heaven. Lead on in God's name.
I do beseech your grace for charity. If ever any malice in your heart were hid against me, now to forgive me frankly.
Sir Thomas Lovell, I as free forgive you as I would be forgiven.
I forgive all. There cannot be those numberless offences gainst me that I cannot take peace with. No black envy shall mark my grave. Commend me to his grace. And if he speak of Buckingham, pray tell him you met him half in heaven. My vows and prayers yet are the king's, until my soul forsake shall cry for blessings on him.
To the waterside I must conduct your grace. Then give my charge up to Sir Nicholas Vaux, who undertakes you to your end.
Prepare there! The Duke is coming! See the barge be ready, and fitted with such furniture as suits the greatness of his person!
Nay, Sir Thomas, let it alone. My state now will but mock me. When I came hither, I was Lord High Constable and Duke of Buckingham. Now poor Edward Bowen. Yet I am richer than my base accusers that never knew what truth meant. I now seal it, and with that blood will make them one day groan for't. My noble father, Henry of Buckingham, who first raised head against usurping Richard, flying for succour to his servant Bannister, being distressed, was by that wretch betrayed, and without trial fell. God's peace be with him. Henry the VII, succeeding, truly pitying my father's loss, like a most royal prince, restored me to my honours, and out of ruins made my name once more noble. Now his son, Henry the VIII, Life, honor, name, and all that made me happy, at one stroke is taken forever from the world. I had my trial, and must needs say a noble one, which makes me a little happier than my wretched father. Yet thus far we are one in fortunes. Both fell by our servants, by those men we loved most. A most unnatural and faithless service. Heaven has an end in all. Yet you that hear me this from a dying man receive a certain. Where you are liberal of your loves and counsels, be sure you be not loose. For those you make friends and give your hearts to, when they once perceive the least rub in your fortunes, fall away like water from ye, never found again but where they mean to sink ye. All good people, pray for me. I must now forsake ye. The last hour of my long, weary life is come upon me. Farewell. And when you would say something that is sad, speak how I fell. I have done. And God forgive me.
Oh, this is full of pity. Sir, it calls, I fear, too many curses on their heads that were the authors.
If the Duke be guiltless, 'tis full of woe. Yet I can give you inkling of an ensuing evil if it fall greater than this.
Good angels, keep it from us. What may it be? You do not doubt my faith, sir.
This secret is so weighty, it will require a strong faith to conceal it.
Let me have it. I do not talk much.
I am confident. You shall, sir. Did you not of late days hear a buzzing of a separation between the king and Catherine?
Yes, but it held not. For when the king once heard it out of anger, he sent command to the Lord Mayor straight to stop the rumour. And allay those tongues that durst disperse
but
it.
But that slander, sir, is found a truth now, for it grows again fresher than ere it was, and held for certain the king will venture at it. Either the cardinal or some about him near have, out of malice to the good queen, possessed him with a scruple that will undo her. To confirm this too, Cardinal Campeus has arrived, and lately, as all think, for this business. It's not cruel that the queen should feel the smart of this. The cardinal will have his will, and she must fall.
It is woeful. We are too open here to argue this. Let's think in private.
My lord, the horses your lordship sent for, with all the care I had, I saw well chosen, ridden, and furnished. They were young and handsome, and of the best breed in the north. When they were ready to set out for London, a man of my Lord Cardinal's, by commission and main power, took them from me. With this reason, his master would be served before a subject, if not before the king, which stopped our mouths, sir. I fear he will indeed. Well, let him have them. He will have all, I think.
Well met, my Lord Chamberlain.
A good day to both your graces.
How was the king employed?
I left him private, full of sad thoughts and troubles.
What's the cause?
It seems the marriage with his brother's wife has crept too near his conscience.
No, his conscience has crept too near another lady.
'Tis so. This is the cardinal's doing, the king cardinal, that blind priest, like the eldest son of fortune, turns what he list. The king will know him one day.
Pray God he do. He'll never know himself else.
How holily he works in all his business. He dives into the king's soul, and there scatters dangers, doubts, ringing of the conscience, fears and despairs, and all these for his marriage. And out of all these, to restore the king, he counsels a divorce, a loss of her that, like a jewel, has hung 20 years about his neck, yet never lost her lustre, of her that loves him with that excellence that angels love good men.
Heaven will open the king's eyes that so long have slept upon this bold, bad man.
And free us from his slavery.
We had need pray, and heartily, for our deliverance, or this imperious man will work us all from princes into pages.
For me, my lords, I love him not, nor fear him. There's my creed. As I am made without him, so I'll stand, if the king please.
His curses and his blessings touch me alike. Their breath I not believe in. I knew him, and I know him, so I leave him. To him that made him proud, the Pope.
Let's in, and with some other business put the king from these sad thoughts that work too much upon him. My lord, you'll bear us company?
Excuse me, the king hath sent me otherwhere. Besides, you'll find a most unfit time to disturb him.
Thanks, my good lord Chamberlain.
Health to your lordships.
Who's there? Ah.
How sad he looks. Sure he is much afflicted.
Pray God he be not angry.
Who's there, I say? How dare you thrust yourselves into my private meditations? Who am I, huh?
A gracious king that pardons all offences, malice ne'er meant. Our breach of duty this way is business of estate, in which we come to know your royal pleasure.
Ye are too bold. Go to. I'll make ye know your times of business. Is this an hour for temporal affairs? Ha! Huh?
Your grace?
Who's there? My good lord cardinal? Oh, my Wolsey, the quiet of my wounded conscience, thou art a cure fit for a king. You're welcome, most learned reverend sir, into our kingdom.
Your majesty. Would your grace forgive us but an hour of private conference?
Norfolk, we are busy. Go. You too, Suffolk, leave us.
This priest has no pride in him.
Not to speak of. I would not be so sick, though, for his place.
But this cannot continue. If it do, I'll venture one half at him.
I another.
Your grace has given a precedent of wisdom above all princes in committing freely your scruple to the voice of Christendom. Who can be angry now? Rome, the nurse of judgment, invited by your noble self, has sent one general tongue unto us, this good man, this just and learned priest, Cardinal Campeius, whom once more I present unto your highness.
And once more in mine arms I bid him welcome.
Your grace must need deserve all strangers' loves. You are so noble. To your highness' hand I tender my commission, by whose virtue the court of Rome commanding... You, my Lord Cardinal of York, are joined with me, their servant, in the impartial judging of this business.
Two equal men. The Queen shall be acquainted forthwith for what you come. Where's Gardiner?
I know your Majesty has always loved her, so dear in heart not to deny her that a woman of less place might ask by law. Scholars allowed freely to argue for her?
Aye, and the best she shall have. And my favour to him that does best, God forbid else. Cardinal, prithee, call Gardiner to me, my new secretary. I find him a fit fellow.
Gardiner?
My lord.
Come here. Much joy and favour to you. You're the king's now.
But to be commanded forever by your grace, whose hand has raised me.
Come hither, Gardiner.
My lord of York, was not one Dr. Pace in this man's place before him?
He was a fool. For he would needs be virtuous. That good fellow, if I command him, follows my appointment. I'll have none so near else. Learn this, brother. We live not to be griped by meaner persons.
Deliver this with modesty to the Queen.
Your Majesty.
The most convenient place that I can think of for such receipt of learning is Blackfriars. There you shall meet about this weighty business. My Wolsey, see it furnished. Oh, my lord, would it not grieve an able man to leave so sweet a bedfellow? But conscience, so tis a tender place, and I must leave her.
Not for that, neither. Here's the pang that pinches. His highness having lived so long with her... And she so good a lady that no tongue could ever pronounce dishonor of her. By my life, she never knew harm doing. Oh, now, after so many courses of the sun enthroned, still growing in a majesty and pomp, the which to leave a thousandfold more bitter than to sweet at first her choir, it is a pity would move a monster.
Alas, poor lady, she's a stranger now again.
So much the more must pity drop upon her. Verily, I swear, 'tis better to be lowly born and range with humble livers in content than to be parked up in a glistering grief and wear a golden sorrow.
Our content is our best having.
By my troth and maidenhead, I would not be a queen.
Beshrew me, I would. And venture Maidenhead for it. And so would you, for all this spice of your hypocrisy. You that have so fair parts of woman on you, have too a woman's heart, which ever yet affected eminence, wealth, sovereignty, which, to say sooth, are blessings, and which gift, saving a mincing, the capacity of your soft chevril conscience would receive, if you might please to stretch it.
Nay, good troth.
Yes, troth and troth. You would not be a queen.
No, not for all the riches under heaven.
'Tis strange. A threepence bode would hire me, old as I am, to queen it. But I pray you, what think you of a duchess? Have you limbs to bear that load of title?
No, in truth.
Then you are weakly made. Pluck off a little. I would not be a young count in your way, for more than blushing comes to. If your back cannot vouchsafe this burden, 'tis too weak ever to get a boy.
How you do talk! I swear again I would not be a queen for all the world.
In faithful little England you'd venture an embawling. I myself would for Carnarvonshire, although they long no more to the crown but that. Oh, no, who comes here?
Good morrow, ladies. What were it worth to know the secret of your conference?
My good Lord Chamberlain, not your demand, it values not your asking. Our mistress's sorrows we were pitying.
Well, you bear a gentle mind, and heavenly blessings follow such creatures. The King's Majesty commends his good opinion of you, and does purpose honour to you no less flowing than Marchioness of Pembroke. To which title £1,000 a year, annual support out of his grace, he adds.
I do not know what kind of my obedience I should tender. More than my all is nothing. Yet prayers and wishes are all I can return. Beseech your lordship, vouchsafe to speak my thanks and my obedience, as from a blushing handmaid to his highness, whose health and royalty I pray for.
Lady, I shall not fail to approve the fair conceit the king hath of you. I'll to the king and say I spoke with you.
My honoured lord.
Why, this it is. See, see. I have been begging 16 years in court, and yet a courtier beggarly. Nor could compact betwixt too early and too late for any suit of pounds. And you, oh, fate, a very fresh fish here. Fie, fie, fie upon this compelled fortune. Have your mouth filled up before you open it.
This is strange to me.
How tastes it? Is it bitter? 40 pence. No. There was a lady once, 'tis an old story, that would not be a queen. That would she not. For all the mud in Egypt. Have you heard it?
Come, you are pleasant.
Oh, with your theme, I could all mount the lark. The Marchioness of Pembroke, £1,000 a year for pure respect. No other obligation. By my life, that promises more thousands. Honour's train is longer than his foreskirt. By this time, I know your back will bear the Duchess. Say, are you not stronger than you were?
Good lady, make yourself mirth with your particular fancy and leave me out, aunt. Would I had no being if this salute my blood a jot. It faints me to think what follows. The Queen is comfortless, and we forgetful in our long absence. Pray, do not deliver what here you have heard to her.
What do you think, me?
Most our commission from Rome is read. Let silence be commanded.
What's the need? It hath already publicly been read, and on all sides the authority allowed. You may then spare that time.
Is it so? Proceed, Master Gardiner.
Say, Catherine, Queen of England, come into the court.
Yes. Catherine, Queen of England, come into the court.
Yes, I know. Oh. Sir, I desire you do me right and justice, and to bestow your pity on me, for
I am a most poor woman and a stranger born out of your dominions, having here no judge indifferent, nor no more assurance of equal friendship and proceeding. Alas, sir, in what have I offended you? What cause hath my behavior given to your displeasure that thus you should proceed to pot me off and take your good grace from me? Heaven witness, I have been to you a true and humble wife, at all times to your will conformable, ever in fear to kindle your dislike, yet subject to your countenance, glad or sorry, as I saw it inclined. When was the hour I ever contradicted your desire, or made it not mine too? Or which of your friends have I not strove to love, although I knew he were mine enemy? What friend of mine that had to him derived your anger did I continue in my liking, nay, gave notice? He was from thence discharged. Sir, call to mind that I have been your wife in this obedience upward of 20 years, and have been blessed with many children by you. If in the course and process of this time you can report and prove it too, against mine honour aught, my bond to wedlock, or my love and duty against your sacred person, in God's name, turn me away, and let the foulest contempt shut door upon me, and so give me up to the sharpest kind of justice. Please you, sir, the king, your father, was reputed for a prince most prudent, of an excellent and unmatched wit and judgment. Ferdinand, my father, king of Spain, was reckoned one the wisest prince that there had reigned by many a year before. It is not to be questioned that they had gathered a wise council to them of every realm that did debate this business, who deemed our marriage lawful. Wherefore I humbly beseech you, sir, to spare me till I may be by my friends in Spain advised, whose counsel I will implore. If not, in the name of God, your pleasure be fulfilled.
You have here, lady, and of your choice, these reverend fathers, men of singular integrity and learning, yea, the elect of the land, who are assembled to plead your cause.
And therefore, madam, it's fit this royal session do proceed, and that without delay their arguments be now produced and heard.
Lord Cardinal, to you I speak.
Your pleasure, madam.
Sir, I am about to weep, but thinking that we are a queen, or long have dreamed so, certain, the daughter of a king, my drops of tears, I'll turn to sparks of fire.
Be patient yet.
I will when you are humble, nay, before. Or God will punish me. I do believe you are mine enemy, and make my challenge, you shall not be my judge, for it is you have blown this coal betwixt my lord and me, which God's due quench. Therefore, I say again, I utterly abhor, yea, from my soul refuse you for my judge, whom yet once more I hold my most malicious foe, and think not at all a friend to truth.
I do profess you speak not like yourself, whoever yet have stood to charity, and displayed effects of disposition gentle and of wisdom, o'ertopping woman's power. Madam, you do me wrong. I have no spleen against you, nor injustice for you or any. How far I have proceeded, or how far further shall, is warranted by a commission from the consistory. Yea, the whole consistory of Rome, you charge me that I have blown this coal. I do deny it. The king is present. If it be known to him that I gainsay my deed, how may he wound unworthily my falsehood, yea, as much as you have done my truth? If he know that I am free of your report, he knows I am not of your wrong. Therefore, in him it lies to cure me, and the cure is to remove these thoughts from you, the which before his highness shall speak in, I do beseech you, gracious madam, to unthink your speaking, and to say so no more.
My lord, I am a simple woman, much too weak to oppose your cunning. You are meek and humble-mouthed. You sign your place and calling in full seeming, with meekness and humility, but your heart is crammed with arrogancy, spleen, and pride. You have, by fortune and His Highness' favors, gone slightly o'er low steps and now are mounted where powers are your retainers, and your words, domestics to you, serve your will as please yourself pronounce their office. I must tell you, you tender more your person's honor than your high profession's spiritual. That again, I do refuse you for my judge, and here, before you all, appeal unto the Pope to bring my whole cause for His Holiness and to be judged by him.
The Queen is obstinate, stubborn to justice, apt to accuse it and disdainful to be tried by it. 'Tis not well. She's going away.
What need you note it? Pray you keep your way. When you are called, return. Now the Lord help. They vex me past my patience. Pray you pass on. I will not tarry, no, nor evermore, upon this business my appearance make in any of your courts.
Go thy ways, Kate. That man of the world who shall report he has a better wife, let him in naught be trusted for speaking false in that. Thou art alone. If thy rare qualities, sweet gentleness, thy meekness, saint-like, wife-like government, obeying in commanding, and thy parts sovereign and pious else could speak thee out, the queen of earthly queens. She's noble born, and like her true nobility, she has carried herself towards me.
Most gracious sir, in humblest manner I require your highness that it shall please you to declare in hearing of all these ears, for whether ever I did broach this business to your highness, or laid any scruple in your way which might induce you to the question on't, or ever have to you, but with thanks to God for such a royal lady, spake one the least word that might be to the prejudice of her present state, or touch of her good person?
My lord cardinal, I do excuse you. Yea, upon mine honour, I free you from't. You are not to be taught that you have many enemies that know not why they are so, but like to village curs, bark when their fellows do. By some of these, the queen is put in anger. You're excused. Now, what moved me to't? I will be bold with time and your attention. My conscience first received a tenderness, scruple, and prick on certain speeches uttered by the Bishop of Bayonne, then French ambassador, who had been hither sent on the debating a marriage twixt the Duke of Orleans and our daughter Mary. In the progress of this business, ere a determinate resolution, the bishop, did require a respite, wherein he might the king his lord advise whether our daughter were legitimate, respecting this our marriage with Catherine, sometimes our brother's wife. This respite shook the bosom of my conscience, entered me, yea, with a splitting power, and made to tremble the region of my breast, which forced such way that many mazed considerings did throng and pressed in with this caution. First, methought, I stood not in the smile of heaven, who had commanded nature that my lady's womb, if it conceived a male child by me, should do no more offices of life to it than the grave does to the dead. For her male issue or died where they were made, or shortly after this world had aired them. Hence I took a thought this was a judgment on me, that my kingdom, well worthy the best heir of the world, should not be gladded in't by me. Then follows that I weighed the danger which my realm stood in by this my issue's fail, and that gave to me many a groaning throe. Thus, hulling in the wild sea of my conscience, I did steer toward this remedy whereupon we are now present here together. I then moved you, my lord of Canterbury, and got your leave to make this present summons. Unsolicited, I left no reverend person in this court, but by particular consent proceeded under your hands and seals. Therefore, go on, for no dislike in the world against the person of the good queen, but the sharp, thorny points of my alleged reasons drive this forward. Prove but our marriage lawful. By my life and kingly dignity, we are contented to wear our mortal state to come with her, Catherine, our queen, before the primest creature that's paragoned of the world.
So please, your highness, the queen being absent, 'tis a needful fitness that we adjourn this court till further day. Meanwhile, must be an earnest motion made to the queen to call back her appeal she intends unto his holiness.
Master Secretary, I may perceive these cardinals trifle with me. I abhor this dilatory sloth and tricks of Rome. My learned and well-beloved servant Cranmer, prithee return. With thy approach, I know my comfort comes along. Break up the court. I say, set on.
Break up the court! Oh.
Break up the court!
Sing to me, Patience. My soul grows sad with troubles. Sing and disperse them, if thou canst. Leave working.
Hélas, madame, celui que j'aime tant, sauve que soit votre humble servant. Votre humble servant, je serai à toujours. Et tant que je vivrai, autre n'aimerai que vous. Et tant que je vivrai, autre n'aimerai que vous.
Oh, no.
And please, your grace, the two great cardinals wait in the presence.
Would they speak with me?
They willed me say so, madam.
Pray their graces to come near. What can be their business with me, a poor weak woman fallen from favor? I do not like their coming.
Haste, your highness.
Your graces find me here part of a housewife. I would be all, against the worst may happen. What are your pleasures with me, reverend lords?
May it please your noble madam to withdraw into your private chamber. We shall give you the full cause of our coming.
Speak it here. There's nothing I have done yet, or my conscience deserves a corner. If your business seek me out, and that way I am wife in, out with it, boldly. Truth loves open dealing.
Tantus ergate meas integritas, regina serenissima.
Oh, good my lord, no Latin. I am not such a truant since my coming as not to know the language I have lived in. A strange tongue makes my cause more strange, suspicious. Pray, speak in English. Here are some will thank you, if you speak truth, for their poor mistress' sake. Believe me, she has had much wrong. Lord Cardinal, the willingest sin I ever yet committed may be absolved in English.
Noble lady, I'm sorry my integrity should breed so deep suspicion. Where all faith was meant, we come not by the way of accusation to taint that honour every good tongue blesses, nor to betray you any way to sorrow. You've too much, good lady, but to know how you stand minded in the weighty difference between the king and you, and to deliver, like free and honest men, our just opinions and comforts to your cause.
Most honored madam, my lord of York, out of his noble nature, zeal and obedience, he still bore your grace, forgetting, like a good man, your late censure, both of his truth and him, which was too far, offers, as I do, in a sign of peace, his service and his counsel.
My lords, I thank you both for your good wills. Ye speak like honest men. Pray God ye prove so. But how to make ye suddenly an answer unto such men of gravity and learning, in truth I know not. I was set at work among my maids, full little, God knows, looking either for such men or such busyness. For her sake that I have been, for I feel the last fit of my greatness. Good your graces, let me have time and counsel for my cause. Alas, I am a woman friendless, hopeless.
Madam, you wrong the king's love with these fears. Your hopes and friends are infinite.
In England, but little for my profit. Can you think, lords, that any Englishman dare give me counsel, or be a known friend gainst his highness' pleasure, and live a subject, nay, forsooth, my friends? They that must weigh out my afflictions, they that my trust must grow to, live not here. They are, as all my other comforts, far hence, in mine own country, lords.
I would your grace would leave your griefs and take my counsel.
How, sir?
Put your main cause into the king's protection. He's loving and most gracious. 'Twill be much both for your honor better and your cause. For if the trial of the Lord overtake ye, you'll part away disgrace.
He tells you rightly.
Ye tell me what ye wish for both. My ruin. Is this your Christian counsel? Out upon ye. Heaven is above all yet. There sits a judge that no king can corrupt.
Your rage mistakes.
The more shame for ye. Holy men, I thought ye. Upon my soul, two reverent cardinal virtues. But cardinal sins and hollow hearts, I fear ye. Mend them for shame, my lords. Is this your comfort? The cordial that ye bring a wretched lady, a woman lost among ye, laughed at, scorned. I will not wish ye half my miseries. I have more charity, but say, I warned ye. Take heed. For heaven's sake, take heed, lest at once the burden of my sorrows fall upon ye.
Madam, this is a mere distraction. You turn the good we offer into envy.
You turn me into nothing. Woe upon ye and all such false professors. Would you have me put my sick cause into his hands that hates me? Alas, he's banished me his bed already, his love too long ago. I am old, my lords, and all the fellowship I hold now with him is only my obedience. What can happen to me above this wretchedness?
Your fears are worse.
Have I lived thus long a wife, a true one, a woman, I dare say, without vainglory, never yet branded with suspicion? Have I, with all my full affection, still met the king, loved him next heaven, obeyed him, been out of fondness, superstitious to him, almost forgot my prayers to content him, and am I thus rewarded? 'Tis not well, lords. Would I had never trod this English earth, or felt the flatteries that grow upon it. Ye have angel faces, but heaven knows your hearts. What will become of me now, wretched lady? I am the most unhappy woman living. Alas, poor wenches, where are now your fortunes? Shipwrecked upon a kingdom where no pity, no friends, no hope, no kindred weep for me.
Oh, for goodness sake, consider what you do, how you may hurt yourself. I utterly grew from the king's acquaintance by this carriage. The hearts of princes kiss obedience, so much they love it, but to stubborn spirits they swell and grow as terrible as storms. I know you have a gentle, noble temper, a soul as even as a calm. Pray think us those we profess, peacemakers, friends, and servants.
Madame, you'll find it so. You wrong your virtues with these weak women's fears. The king loves you. Beware you lose it not. For us, if you please to trust us in your business, we are ready to use our utmost studies in your service.
Do what ye will, my lords. And pray forgive me if I have used myself unmannerly. You know I am a woman lacking wit to make a seemly answer to such persons. Pray do my service to his majesty. He has my heart yet and shall have my prayers while I shall have my life. Come, reverend fathers, bestow your counsels on me. She now begs that little thought when she set footing here, she should have bought her dignity so dear.
Benedicts your day, descendat super paeat manet semper, in nomine patris et filii et spiritus sancti.
Well,
If you will now unite in your complaints and force them with a constancy, the cardinal cannot stand under them.
I am joyful to meet the least occasion that may give me remembrance of my father-in-law, the Duke, to be revenged on him.
Which of the peers have uncontemned gone by him, or at least strangely neglected?
If you cannot bar his access to the king, never attempt anything on him, for he hath a witchcraft over the king's tongue.
Oh, fear him not. His spell in, that is out. The king hath found matter against him that forever mars the honey of his language. This is true. In the divorce, his contrary proceedings are all unfolded, wherein he appears as I would wish mine enemy.
How came his practices to light?
Most strangely.
How?
The cardinal's letters to the Pope miscarried and came to the eye of the king, wherein was read how that the cardinal did entreat his holiness to stay the judgment of the divorce. For if it did take place, I do, quoth he, perceive my king is tangled in affection to a creature of the queen's, Lady Anne Boleyn.
Has the king this?
Believe it.
Will this work?
The king in this perceives him, how he coasts and hedges his own way. But in this point will his tricks founder, for the king already hath married the fair lady.
Would he had.
May you be happy in your wish, my lord, for I profess you have it.
Now all my joy, trace the conjunction.
My amen to it.
All men's.
There's order given for her coronation. Marry, this is yet but young, and may be left to some ears unrecounted. But, my lord, she is a gallant creature, and complete in mind and feature. I persuade me, from her will fall some blessing to this land, which shall in it be memorized.
But will the king digest this letter of the cardinal's? No. Lord forbid.
Marry, amen.
No, no. There be more wasps that buzz about his nose will make this sting the sooner. Cardinal Campeus is stolen away to Rome, hath ta'en no leave, has left the cause of the king unhandled, and is posted as the agent of our cardinal to second all his plot. I do assure you, the king cried ha at this.
And now God incense him and let him cry ha louder.
But, my lord, when returns Cranmer?
He is returned in his opinions, which have satisfied the king for his divorce, together with all famous colleges almost in Christendom. Shortly, I believe, his second marriage shall be published and her coronation. Catherine no more shall be called queen, but Princess Dowager and widow to Prince Arthur.
This same Cranmer's a worthy fellow and hath taken much pain in the king's business.
He has, and we shall see him for it an archbishop.
So I hear.
'Tis so. The cardinal!
Observe, observe. He's moody.
Captain Cromwell? Gave it ye the king?
To his own hand, in his bedchamber.
Well, look here, the inside of the paper.
Presently he did unseal them, and the first he viewed, he did it with a serious mind. A heed was in his countenance. You he bade attend him here this morning.
Is he ready to come abroad?
I think by this he is.
Leave me a while.
My lord.
It shall be to the Duchess of Alençon, the French king's sister. He shall marry her. Anne Boleyn? No, I'll know Anne Boleyn's for him. There's more in than fair visage. Boleyn? No, we'll no Boleyns. Speedily I wish to hear from Rome. The Marchioness of Pembroke, the late Queen's gentlewoman, a knight's daughter, to be her mistress, the Queen's queen. This candle burns not clear. 'Tis I must snuff it, then out it goes. What, though I know her virtuous and well-deserving? Yet I know her for a spleeny Lutheran, and not wholesome to our cause that she should lie in the bosom of our hard-ruled king. Again there is sprung up an heretic, an arch one, Cranmer, one hath crawled into the favour of the king, and is his oracle.
He is vexed at something.
I would 'twas something that would fret the string, the master cordon's heart.
The king, the king.
What piles of wealth hath he accumulated to his own portion? And what expense by the hour seems to flow from him? How in the name of thrift does he rake this together? Now, my lords, saw you the cardinal?
My lord, we have stood here observing him. Some strange commotion is in his brain. He bites his lip and starts, stops on a sudden, looks upon the ground, then lays his finger on his temple, straight springs out into fast gait, then stops again.
There is a mutiny in his mind. This morning, papers of state he sent me to peruse as I required, and what you what I found there, on my conscience put unwittingly, forsooth an inventory.
thus importing the several parcels of his plate, his treasure, rich stuffs and ornaments of household, which I find at such proud rate that it outspeaks possession of a subject.
It's heaven's will. Some spirit put this paper in the package to bless your eye withal.
If we did think his contemplation were above the earth and fixed on spiritual object, he should still dwell in his musings. But I am afraid his thinkings are below the moon, not worth his serious considering. Norfolk, call him here to us.
Your Majesty.
Oh, heaven forgive me. Ever God bless your Highness.
Good my lord, you are full of heavenly stuff, and bear the inventory of your best graces in your mind, the which you were now running o'er. You have scarce time to steal from spiritual leisure a brief span to keep your earthly audit. Sure, in that I deem you an ill husband, and am glad to have you therein my companion.
Sir, for holy offices I have a time to think upon the part of business which I bear in this state, and nature does require her times of preservation, which perforce I, her frail son, amongst my brethren mortal, must give my tendance to.
You have said well. And 'tis a kind of good deed to say well, and yet words are no deeds. My father loved you. He said he did. And with his deed did crown his word upon you. Since I had my office, I have kept you next my heart. Have not alone employed you where high profits might come home, but paired my present havings to bestow my bounties upon you. Have I not made you the prime man of the state? I pray you tell me if what I now pronounce you have found true, and if you may confess it, say withal if you are bound to us or no. What say you?
My sovereign, I confess your royal graces, showered on me daily, have been more than could my studied purposes requite, which went beyond all man's endeavours. For your great graces, heaped upon me, poor undeserver, I can nothing render but allegiant thanks, my prayers to heaven for you, my loyalty, which ever has and ever shall be growing, till death that winter. Kill it.
Fairly answered. A loyal and obedient subject is therein illustrated. The honour of it does pay the act of it, as in the contrary, the foulness is the punishment. I presume that as my hand has opened bounty to you, my heart dropped love, my power rained honour more on you than any, so your hand and heart, your brain and every function of your power, should, notwithstanding that your bond of duty, as 'twere in love's particular, be more to me your friend than any.
Well, I do profess that for your Highness' good I ever laboured more than mine own.
'Tis nobly spoken. Take notice, lords, he has a loyal breast, for you have seen him opened. Read her this, and after this, and then to breakfast with what appetite you have.
What should this mean? What sudden anger is this? I must read this paper. I fear the story of his anger. 'Tis so. This paper has undone me. 'Tis the account of all that world of wealth I've drawn together for mine own ends, indeed, to gain the popedom and fee my friends in Rome. Oh, negligence fit for a fool to fall by. What cross devil made me put this main secret in the packet I sent the king? And what's this? To the Pope. The letter as I live with all the business I writ to his holiness. Nay then, farewell. I have touched the highest point of all my greatness, and from that full meridian of my glory I hasten out of my setting. I shall fall like a bright exhalation of the evening, and no man see me more.
Hear the king's pleasure, Cardinal, who commands you to render up the great seal presently into our hands, and to confine yourself to Esher House, my Lord of Winchester's, till you hear further from his Highness.
Oh, stay, where's your commission, lords? Words cannot carry authority so weighty.
Who dare cross him?
bearing the king's will from his mouth expressly.
Till I find more than will or words to do it, I mean your malice, no, officious lords, I dare and must deny it. No, that seal you ask with such a violence, the king, mine and your master, with his own hand gave me, bade me enjoy it with the place and honours during my life, and to confirm his goodness, tied it by letters patents. Now who'll take it?
The king that gave it.
It must be himself, then.
Thou art a proud traitor, priest.
Proud lord, thou liest. Within these 40 hours, Surrey durst better have burnt that tongue than said so.
Thy ambition, thou scarlet sin, robbed this bewailing land of noble Buckingham, my father-in-law. The heads of all thy brother cardinals, with thee and all thy best parts bound together, weigh not a hair of his. Plague of your policy.
Yes, and all else this talking lord can lay upon my credit, I answer as most false. The Duke by law found his deserts. How innocent I was from any private malice in his end, his noble jury in foul cause can witness. If I love many words, lord, I should tell you, you've as little honesty as honour, that in the way of loyalty and truth toward the king, my ever royal master, dare make a sounder man than Surrey can be, and all that love is follies.
By my soul, your long coat priest protects you. Thou shouldst feel my sword of the life-blood of the else. My lords, can he endure to hear this arrogance from this fellow? If we live thus tamely to be thus jaded by a piece of scarlet, farewell, nobility. Mm-hmm. Let his grace go forward and dare us with his cap like larks.
All goodness is poison to thy stomach.
Yes, that goodness of gleaning all the land's wealth into one into your own hands, Cardinal, by extortion. The goodness of your intercepted packets you writ to the Pope against the King. Your goodness, since you provoke me, shall be most notorious. My Lord of Norfolk, as you are truly noble, produce the grand sum of his sins, the articles collected from his life. I'll startle you worse than the sacring bell when the brown wench lay kissing in your arms, Lord Cardinal.
How much methinks I could despise this man, but that I am bound in charity against it.
Those articles, my lord, are in the king's hand, but thus much they are foul ones.
So much fairer and spotless shall mine innocence arise when the king knows my truth.
This cannot save you. I thank my memory I yet remember some of these articles, and out they shall. Now, if you can blush and cry guilty, Cardinal, you'll show a little honesty.
Speak on, sir. I dare your worst objections. If I blush, it is to see a noble man want manners.
I had rather want those than my head. Haven't you? First, that without the king's assent or knowledge, you wrought to be a legate, by which power you maimed the jurisdiction of all bishops.
Then, that in all you writ to Rome or else to foreign princes, ego et rex meus was still inscribed, in which you brought the king to be your servant.
Then, that without the knowledge, either of king or council, when you went ambassador to the emperor, you made bold to carry into Flanders the great seal, that out of mere ambition, you have caused your holy hat to be stamped on the king's coin.
Then, that you have sent innumerable substance, by what means God I leave to your own conscience, to furnish Rome and to prepare the ways you have for dignities, to the mere undoing of all the kingdom. Many more there are, which, since they are of you and odious, I will not taint my mouth with.
Lord Cardinal, the king's further pleasure is, because all those things you have done of late, that therefore such a writ be sued against you, to forfeit all your goods, lands, tenements, chattels, and whatsoever, and to be out of the king's protection. This is my charge.
And so we'll leave you to your meditations, how to live better. For your stubborn answer about the giving back the great seal to us, the king shall know it, and no doubt shall thank you. So fare you well, my little good Lord Cardinal.
So farewell to the little good you bear me. Farewell. A long farewell to all my greatness. This is the state of man. Today he puts forth the tender leaves of hopes. Tomorrow blossoms and bears his blushing honours thick upon him. The third day comes a frost, a killing frost, and when he thinks, good easy man, full surely his greatness is a ripening, nips his root, and then he falls, as I do, I have ventured like little wanton boys that swim on bladders this many summers in a sea of glory. But far beyond my depth, my high-blown pride at length broke under me, and now has left me weary and old with service to the mercy of a rude stream that must forever hide me. Vain pomp and glory of this world, I hate ye. I feel my heart new opened. Oh, how wretched is that poor man that hangs on princes' favours. There is, betwixt that smile we would aspire to, that sweet aspect of princes and their ruin, more pangs and fears than wars or women have. And when he falls like Lucifer, never to hope again. Why, how now, Cromwell?
I have no power to speak, sir.
What, amazed at my misfortunes? Can thy spirit wonder a great man should decline? Nay, and you weep when fallen indeed.
How does your grace?
Why, well, never so truly happy, my good Cromwell. I know myself now, and I feel within me a peace above all earthly dignities, a still and quiet conscience. The king has cured me. I humbly thank his grace, and from these shoulders, these ruined pillars, out of pity taken a load, would sink a navy. Too much honour. Oh, 'tis a burden, Cromwell. 'Tis a burden too heavy for a man that hopes for heaven. What news abroad?
The heaviest and the worst is your displeasure with the king.
God bless him.
The next is that Sir Thomas More is chosen Lord Chancellor in your place.
That's somewhat sudden. But he's a learned man. May he continue long in his highness' favour and do justice for truth's sake and his conscience, that his bones, when he has run his course and sleeps in blessings, may have a tomb of orphans' tears wept on him. What more?
That Cranmer is returned with welcome, installed Lord Archbishop of Canterbury.
That's news indeed.
Last, that the Lady Anne, whom the king hath in secrecy long married, this day was viewed in open as his queen, going to chapel, and the voice is now only about her coronation.
There was the weight that pulled me down, O Cromwell. The king has gone beyond me. All my glories in that one woman I have lost forever. No son shall ever usher forth mine honours or gild again the noble troops that waited upon my smiles. Go get thee from me, Cromwell. I am a poor fallen man, unworthy now to be thy lord and master. Seek the king, neglect him not. Make use now and provide for thine own future safety.
Oh, my lord, must I then leave you? Must I needs forego so good, so noble, and so true a master?
Cromwell, I did not think to shed a tear in all my miseries, but thou hast forced me, out of thy honest truth, to play the woman. Let's dry our eyes, and thus far hear me, Cromwell. And when I am forgotten, as I shall be, and sleep in dull, cold marble, where no mention of me more must be heard of, say, I taught thee, say, Wolsey, that once trod the ways of glory and sounded all the depths and shoals of honour, found thee a way out of his wreck to rise in, a sure and safe one, though thy master missed it. Mark but my fall and that ruined me. Cromwell, I charge thee, fling away ambition. By that sin fell the angels. How can man, then, the image of his Maker, hope to win by it? Love thyself last. Cherish those hearts that hate thee. Corruption wins not more than honesty. Still in thy right hand carry gentle peace to silence envious tongues. Be just and fear not. Let all the ends thou aim'st at be thy country's, thy God's, and truth's. Then if thou fallest, O Cromwell, thou fallest a blessed martyr, serve the king. And prithee, lead me in. There, take an inventory of all I have, to the last penny. 'Tis the king's. My robe and my integrity to heaven is all I dare now call mine own. O Cromwell, Cromwell, Had I but served my God with half the zeal I serve my king, he would not in my age have left me naked to mine enemies.
Good sir, have patience.
So I have. Farewell, the hopes of court. My hopes in heaven do dwell.
Oh, you're well met once again.
So are you.
You come to take your stand here, behold the Lady Anne pass from her coronation.
It is all my business. The citizens, I'm sure, have shown at full their royal minds in celebration of this day with shows, pageants, and sights of honour.
Never greater, nor, I'll assure you, better taken, sir.
But I beseech you, what's become of Catherine, the Princess Dowager? How goes her business?
That I can tell you too. The Archbishop of Canterbury, accompanied with other learned and reverend fathers of his order, held a late court at Dunstable, 6 miles off Mantle, where the princess lay, to which she was often cited by them, but appeared not. And to be short, for not appearance and the king's late scruple, by the main assent of all these learned men, she was divorced, and the late marriage made of none effect, since which she was removed to Kimbolton, where she remains now sick.
Alas, good lady. The trumpets sound. Stand close, the queen is coming. Heaven bless thee. Thou hast the sweetest face I ever looked on. Sir, as I ever saw, she is an angel. Our king has all the Indies in his arms, and more and richer when he strains that lady. I cannot blame his conscience.
God save you, sir. Who have you been broiling?
Among the crowd in the abbey, where a finger could not be wedged in more, I am stifled with the mere rankness of their joy. Believe me, sir, she is the goodliest woman that ever lay by man, which, when the people had the full view of, such a noise arose as the shrouds make at sea in a stiff tempest, as loud and to as many tunes. Hats, cloaks, doublets, I think, flew up. And had their faces been loose, this day they had been lost. Such joy I never saw before.
But say, what followed?
At length, her grace rose, and with modest paces came to the altar, where she kneeled and saint-like, cast her fair eyes to heaven, and prayed devoutly. Then rose again, and bowed her to the people. When by the Archbishop of Canterbury she had all the royal makings of a queen, as holy oil, Edward Confessor's crown, the rod and bird of peace, and all such emblems laid nobly on her, which performed, the choir, with all the choicest music of the kingdom together, sung Te Deum. So she parted, and with the same full state paced back again to York Place, where the feast is held.
What two reverend bishops were those that went on each side of the queen?
Stokesley and Gardiner, the one of Winchester, newly preferred from the king's secretary, the other, London.
He of Winchester is held no great good lover of the archbishop's, the virtuous Cranmer.
All the land knows that. However, yet there is no great breach. When it comes, Cranmer will find a friend, will not shrink from him.
Who may that be, I pray you?
Thomas Cromwell. A man in much esteem of the king, and truly a worthy friend. The king has made him master of the jewel house, and one already of the privy council.
He will deserve more.
Yes, without all doubt. Come, gentlemen, ye shall go my way, which is to the court, and there ye shall be my guests.
How does your grace?
Oh, Griffith, sick to death. My legs, like loaden branches, bow to the earth, willing to leave their burden. Reach a chair. So, now methinks I feel a little ease. Didst thou not tell me, Griffith, as thou ledst me, that the great child of honour, Cardinal Wolsey, was dead? Hmm.
So the voice goes, madam, that after the stout Earl Northumberland arrested him at York and brought him forward as a man sorely tainted, to his answer, he fell sick suddenly and grew so ill he could not sit his mule.
Alas, poor man.
At last, with easy roads, he came to Leicester, lodged in the abbey, where the reverend abbot, with all his convent, honourably received him, to whom he gave these words. O Father Abbot, an old man, broken with the storms of state, is come to lay his weary bones among you. Give him a little earth for charity. So went to bed, where eagerly his sickness pursued him still. And 3 nights after this, about the hour of 8, which he himself foretold should be his last, full of repentance, continual meditations, tears and sorrows, he gave his honours to the world again, his blessed part to heaven, and slept in peace.
So may he rest. His faults lie gently on him. Yet thus far, Griffith, give me leave to speak him, and yet with charity. He was a man of an unbounded stomach, ever ranking himself with princes, one that in the presence would say untruths and be ever double both in his words and meaning. He was never, but where he meant to ruin, pitiful. His promises were, as he then was, mighty, but his performance, as he is now, nothing.
Men's evil manners live in brass. Their virtues we write in water. May it please your highness to hear me speak his good now.
Yes, good Griffith. I were malicious else.
This cardinal, though from an humble stock, undoubtedly was fashioned to much honour. From his cradle he was a scholar, and a ripe and good one. Exceeding wise, fair-spoken and persuading, lofty and sour to them that loved him not, but to those men that sought him, sweet as summer. His overthrow heaped happiness upon him, for then, and not till then, he felt himself, and found the blessedness of being little, and to add greater honours to his age than man could give him, he died fearing God.
After my death, I wish no other herald, no other speaker of my living actions to keep mine honour from corruption, but such an honest chronicler as Griffith, whom I most hated living, thou hast made me with thy religious truth and modesty, now in his ashes honour. Peace be with him. Patience.
Yes, madam.
I pray thee, set me lower. I have not long to trouble thee. Good Griffith, cause the musicians play me that sad note I named my knell, whilst I sit meditating on that celestial harmony I go to.
She is asleep. Good wench, let's sit down quiet for fear we wake her. Softly, gentle patience.
Spirits of peace, where are ye? Are ye all gone and leave me here in wretchedness behind ye?
Madam, you are here.
It is not you I call for. So ye none enter since I slept?
None, madam.
No? Saw you not even now a blessed troop invite me to a banquet whose bright faces cast 1,000 beams upon me like the sun? They promised me eternal happiness and brought me garlands, Griffith, which I feel I am not worthy yet to wear.
I am most joyful, madam. Such good dreams possess your fancy.
Bid the music leave. They're harsh and heavy to me.
Do you note how much her grace is altered on the sudden? How long her face is drawn, how pale she looks.
She is going, wench. Pray, pray.
Oh, heaven comfort her.
And like your grace...
You are a saucy fellow. Deserve we no more reverence?
Go to, kneel.
I humbly do entreat your highness' pardon. My haste made me unmanly. There is staying a gentleman sent from the king to see you.
Admit him entrance, Griffith. But this fellow, let me ne'er see again.
Madam, your servant.
Oh, if my sight fail not, you should be Lord Ambassador from the Emperor, my royal nephew, and your name Capucius.
Noble lady, first mine own service to your grace. The next, the king's request that I would visit you, who grieves much for your weakness, and by me sends you his princely commendations, and heartily entreats you take good comfort.
Oh, my good lord, that comfort comes too late. 'Tis like a pardon after execution. That gentle physic given in time had cured me. But now I am past all comforts here but prayers. How does His Highness?
Madam, in good health.
Ah, so may he ever do and ever flourish. When I shall dwell with worms, and my poor name banished the kingdom. Patience, is that letter I caused you write yet sent away?
No, madam.
Sir, I most humbly pray you to deliver this to my lord the king.
Most willing, madam.
In which I have commended to his goodness the model of our chaste loves, his young daughter. The dews of heaven fall thick in blessings on her, beseeching him to give her virtuous breeding. She is young and of a noble, modest nature. I hope she will deserve well, and a little to love her for her mother's sake that loved him heaven knows how dearly. My next poor petition is that his noble grace would have some pity upon my wretched women that so long have followed both my fortunes faithfully, of which there is not one, I dare avow, and now I should not lie, but will deserve a right good husband. Let him be a noble, and sure those men are happy that shall have them. The last is for my men. They are the poorest, but poverty could never draw them from me, that they may have their wages duly paid them, and something over to remember me by. These are the whole contents, and good, my lord. As you wish Christian peace to souls departed, stand these poor people's friend and urge the king to do me this last rite.
By heaven, I will. Or let me lose the fashion of a man.
I thank you, honest lord. Remember me in all humility unto his highness. Say his long trouble now is passing out of this world. Tell him In death I blessed him, for so I will. Mine eyes grow dim. Farewell, my lord. Griffith, farewell. Nay, patience. You must not leave me yet. I must to bed. Call in more women. When I am dead, good wench, let me be used with honor. Strew me over with maiden flowers that all the world may know I was a chaste wife to my grave. Embalm me, then lay me forth, although unqueened, yet like a queen, and daughter to a king, inter me. I can no more.
Good hour of night, Sir Thomas. Whither so late?
Came in from the king, my lord.
I did, Sir Thomas, and left him at Primero with the Duke of Suffolk.
I muster him too before he go to bed. I'll take my leave.
Not yet, Sir Thomas Lovell. What's the matter? It seems you are in haste.
The queen's in labour. They say in great extremity, and feared she'll with the labour end.
The fruit she goes with I pray for heartily, that it may find good time and live. But for the stock, Sir Thomas, I wish it grubbed up now.
Methinks I could cry the amen, and yet my conscience says she's a good creature, and sweet lady does deserve our better wishes.
But sir, hear me, Sir Thomas. It will ne'er be well till Cranmer, Cromwell, her two hands, and she sleep in their graves.
Now, sir, you speak of two the most remarked of the kingdom. As for Cromwell, beside that of the Jewel House, is made Master of the Rolls, and the King's Secretary. The Archbishop is the King's hand and tongue, and who dare speak one syllable against him?
Yes, yes, Sir Thomas, there are that dare. And I myself have ventured to speak my mind of him, and indeed this day, sir, I may tell it you, I think, I have incensed the lords of the Council that he is a most arch heretic, a pestilence that does infect the land with which they moved have broken with the King, who hath so far given ear to our complaint of his great grace and princely care for seeing those fell mischiefs our reasons laid before him, hath commanded tomorrow morning to the council board he be convented. He's a rank weed, Sir Thomas, summoned, and we must root him out. From your affairs, I hinder you too long. Good night, Sir Thomas.
Many good nights, my lord of Winchester. I rest your servant.
Charles, I will play no more tonight. My mind's not on. You are too hard for me.
Sir, I did never win of you before.
But little, Charles, nor shall not when my fancy's on my play.
Good, my lord.
From the Queen, what is the news?
I could not personally deliver to her what you commanded me, but by her woman I sent your message, who returned her thanks in the greatest humbleness, and desired your highness most heartily to pray for her.
Alas, good lady.
God safely quit her of her burden, and with gentle travail, to the gladding of your highness with an heir.
'Tis midnight, Charles, prithee to bed, and in thy prayers remember the estate of my poor queen.
I wish your highness a quiet night, and my good mistress will remember in my prayers.
Charles, good night. Sir Anthony, what follows?
Sir, I have brought my lord the Archbishop, as you commanded me.
Then send him to us. Avoid the gallery.
Huh?
I have said, be gone. How now, my lord? You do desire to know wherefore I sent for you.
It is my duty to attend your highness's pleasure.
Pray you arise, my good and gracious lord of Canterbury. I have, and most unwillingly of late, heard many grievous, I do say, my lord, grievous complaints of you, which, being considered, have moved us and our council, that you shall this morning come before us, where I know you cannot with such freedom purge yourself, but that till further trial in those charges which will require your answer, you must take your patience to you and be well contented to make your house our tower. You are a brother of us. It fits we thus proceed, or else no witness would come against you.
I humbly thank your highness, and am right glad to catch this good occasion, most truly to be winnowed, where my chaff and corn shall fly asunder. For I know there's none stands under more calumnious tongues than I myself, poor man.
Stand up, good Canterbury. Thy truth and thy integrity is rooted in us, thy friend. Give me thy hand. Stand up. What manner of man are you? My lord, I looked you would have given me your petition, that I should have taken some pains to bring together yourself and your accusers, and to have heard you without endurance further.
Most dread liege, the good I stand on is my truth and honesty. If they shall fail, I, with mine enemies, will triumph o'er my person, which I weigh not, being of those virtues vacant. I fear nothing what can be said against me.
Know you not how your state stands in the world with the whole world? Your enemies are many and not small. Their practices must bear the same proportion. And not ever the justice and the truth of the question carries the due of the verdict with it. At what ease might corrupt minds procure knaves as corrupt to swear against you? Go to, Cranmer, go to. You take a precipice for no leap of danger, and woo your own destruction.
God and your majesty protect mine innocence, or I fall into the trap is laid for me.
Be of good cheer. They shall no more prevail than we give way to. Keep comfort to you, and this morning see you do appear before them. If they shall chance, in charging you with matters, to commit you, the best persuasions to the contrary fail not to use, and with what vehemency the occasion shall instruct you. If entreaties will render you no remedy, this ring deliver them, and your appeal to us there make before them. Look, the good man weeps. He's honest, on mine honour. God's blessed mother, I swear he is true-hearted, and a soul none better in my kingdom. Get you gone, and do as I have bid you. He has strangled his language in his tears.
Come back, what mean you?
I'll not come back. The tidings that I bring will make my boldness manners. No. Good angels, fly o'er thy royal head, and shade thy person under their blessed wings.
Now by thy looks I guess thy message. Is the queen delivered? Say aye, and of a boy.
Aye, my liege, and of a lovely boy. The God of heaven both now and ever bless her. 'Tis a girl. Promises boys hereafter. Sir, your queen desires your visitation, and to be acquainted with this stranger. 'Tis as like you as cherry is to cherry.
Lovell.
Sir?
Give her 100 marks. I'll to the queen.
100 marks? By this light, I'll have more.
Oh.
I will have more, or scold it out of him. Said I for this the girl was like to him? I will have more, or else unsay it. And now, while it is hot, I'll put it to the issue.
Speak to the business, Master Secretary. Why are we met in council?
Please, Your Honours, the chief cause concerns His Grace of Canterbury.
Has he had knowledge of it?
Yes.
Who waits there?
Without, my noble lords.
Yes.
My lord Archbishop. Announced in half an hour to know your pleasures.
Let him come in.
Your grace may enter now.
My good lord Archbishop, I'm very sorry to sit here at this present and behold that chair stand empty. But we all are men, in our own natures, frail and capable of our flesh. Few are angels, out of which frailty and want of wisdom you that best should teach us have misdemeaned yourself, and not a little. Toward the king first, then his laws, in filling the whole realm by your teaching and your chaplains, for so we are informed, with new opinions, diverse and dangerous, which are heresies, and not reformed, may prove pernicious.
Which reformation must be sudden too, my noble lords. For if we do suffer out of our easiness and childish pity to one man's honour, this contagious sickness, farewell all physic. And what follows then? Commotions, uproars, with a general taint of the whole state, as of late days our neighbours, the Upper Germany, can dearly witness, yet freshly pitied in our memories.
My good lords, hitherto, in all the progress both of my life and office, I have laboured, and with no little study, that my teaching and the strong course of my authority might go one way, and safely, and the end was ever to do well. Nor is there living a man that more detests, more stirs against, both in his private conscience and his place, defacers of a public peace than I do. Pray heaven the king may never find a heart with less allegiance in it. Men that make envy and crooked malice nourishment dare bite the best. I do beseech your lordships that in this case of justice my accusers, be what they will, may stand forth face to face and freely urge against me.
Nay, my lord, that cannot be. You are a counsellor. By that virtue, no man dare accuse you.
My lord, because we have business of more moment, we will be short with you. 'Tis his highness' pleasure, and our consent for better trial of you, from hence you be committed to the Tower, where, being but a private man again, you shall know many dare accuse you boldly. More than, I fear, you are provided for.
Ah, my good lord of Winchester, I thank you. You are always my good friend. If your will pass, I shall both find your lordship judge and juror. You are so merciful. I see your end. Is my undoing. Love and meekness, Lord, become a churchman better than ambition. Win straying souls with modesty again, cast none away. That I shall clear myself, I make as little doubt as you have conscience in doing daily wrongs. I could say more, but reverence to your calling makes me modest.
My lord, you are a sectary! That's the plain truth. Your painted gloss discovers, to men that understand you, words and weakness.
My lord of Winchester, you're a little, by your good favour, too sharp. Men so noble, however faulty, yet should find respect for what they have been. 'Tis a cruelty to load a falling man.
Good Master Secretary, I cry your honour mercy. You may worst of all this table say so.
Why, my lord?
Do not I know you for a favour of this new sect? Ye are not sound.
Not sound?
Not sound, I say.
Would you were half so honest. Men's prayers then would seek you, not their fears.
I shall remember this bold language.
Do remember your bold life, too.
This is too much. Forbear for shame, my lords.
I have done.
And I.
Then thus for you, my lord. It stands agreed, I take it by all voices, that forthwith you be conveyed to the Tower a prisoner, there to remain till the king's further pleasure be known unto us. Are you all agreed, lords?
We are.
Is there no other way of mercy than I must needs to the Tower, my lords?
What other would you expect? You are strangely troublesome. Let some of the guard be ready there.
For me? Must I go like a traitor thither?
Receive him and see him safe in the Tower.
Stay, good my lords. I have a little yet to say. Look there, my lords. By virtue of this ring, I take my cause out of the gripes of cruel men and give it to a most noble judge, the king, my master.
This is the king's ring.
There's no counterfeit.
It is the right ring, by heaven.
I told you all, when you first put this dangerous stone a-rolling, t'would fall upon ourselves.
Do you think, my lords, the king will suffer but the little finger of this man to be vexed?
'Tis now too certain. How much more is his life in value with him? Would I were fairly out on't.
My mind gave me, in seeking tales and informations against this man, whose honesty the devil and his disciples only envy at, ye blew the fire that burns ye. Now have it, ye!
I'll pay you for that!
King!
Yes, King!
I had thought I had had men of some understanding and wisdom of my counsel, but I find none.
Dread sovereign, how much are we bound to heaven in daily thanks that gave us such a prince? Not only good and wise, but most religious. One that in all obedience makes the church the chief aim of his honour, and to strengthen that holy duty out of dear respect, his royal self in judgment comes to hear the cause betwixt her and this great offender.
You were ever good at sudden commendations, Bishop of Winchester. But no, I come not to hear such flattery now and in my presence. They are too thin and bare to hide offences. To me you cannot reach. You play the spaniel and think with wagging of your tongue to win me. But whatsoe'er thou takest me for, I'm sure thou hast a cruel nature and a bloody. Cranmer, sit down. Now let me see the proudest. He that dares most but wag his finger at thee. By all that's holy, he had better starve than but once think this place becomes thee not.
May it please your grace.
No, sir, it does not please me. Was it discretion, lords, to let this man, this good man, few of you deserve that title, this honest man, wait like a lousy footboy at chamber door? And one as great as you are? Why, what a shame was this! Did my commission bid ye so far forget yourselves? I gave ye power as he was a counsellor to try him, not as a groom. There's some of ye, I see, more out of malice than integrity, would try him to the utmost, had ye means, which ye shall never have while I live.
Thus far, my most dread sovereign, may it like your grace to let my tongue excuse all. What was purposed concerning his imprisonment was rather, if there be faith in men meant for his trial and fair purgation to the world, than malice I'm sure in me.
Well, well, my lords, respect him. Take him and use him well. He's worthy of it. I will say thus much for him. If a prince may be beholding to a subject, I am, for his love and service so to him. Make me no more ado, but all embrace him. Be friends, for shame, my lords. My lord of Canterbury, I have a suit which you must not deny me. That is, a fair young maid that yet wants baptism. You must be godfather and answer for her.
The greatest monarch now alive may glory in such an honour. How may I deserve it that am a poor and humble subject to you?
Come, come, my lord, you'd spare your spoons. You shall have two noble partners with you, the old Duchess of Norfolk and Lady Marquess Dorset. Will these please you? Once more, my lord of Winchester, I charge you, embrace and love this man.
With a true heart and brother love, I do it.
And let heaven witness how dear I hold this confirmation.
Good man, those joyful tears show thy true heart. The common voice, I see, is verified of thee, which says thus, do my lord of Canterbury a shrewd turn, and he is your friend forever. Come, lords, we try full time away. I long to have this young one made a Christian. As I have made ye one, lords, one remain. So I grow stronger, you more honor gain.
Get off me!
Take the call for Parish Garden, you rude slaves! Leave your gaping!
I belong
to the Yaga!
Belong to the gallows and be hanged, you rogue! Is this a place to roar in? Hey, fetch me a dozen Crabtree staves and strong ones! These are but switches to them! Oh, scratch your heads! You must be seeing christenings! Do you look for ale and cakes here, you rude rascal?
Right, sir, be patient, it's as much impossible. Unless we slam them on the door with cannons, the scarum is to make them sleep on May Day morning, which will never be. We may as well push against pools as stir them. Oh, you!
And got they in and be hanged.
Alas, I know not. How gets the tidy? As much as one sand cudgel of 4 foot, you see the poor remainder could distribute. I made no spare, sir.
You did nothing, sir.
I am not Samson, nor Sir Guy, nor Colbrand, to mow them down before me. If I spared any that had a head to hit, either young or old, he or she, cuckold or cuckold maker, let me ne'er open to your shine again. And that I would not for a cow, God's sober.
Do you hear, Master Porter?
I shall be with you presently, good Master Puppy. Keep the door closed, sirrah.
What would you have me do?
Oh, what should you do but knock them down by the dozens? Oh, is this more fields to muster in? Or have we some strange Indian with the great tool come to court the women's soldier seizures? Bless me, what a fry of fornication is a door. On my Christian conscience, this one Christian will beget 1,000. He will be father, godfather, and all together.
Oh. The spoons will be the bigger, sir. Yeah. There is a fellow somewhat near the door. He should be a brazier by his face. For on my conscience, 20 of the dog days now reign in his nose. All that stand about him are under the line. They need no other penance. That fire drake that I hit 3 times on the head, and 3 times was his nose discharged against me. He stands there like a mortar piece to blow us. There was a haberdasher's wife of small wit near him that railed upon me till her pinked porringer fell off her head for kindling such a combustion in the state. I missed a meteor once and hit that woman, who cried out, "Clubs!" when I might see from far some 40 truncheoners draw to her succour, which were the oak with a strand where she was quartered. They fell on. I made good my place. At length, they came to the broomstaff to me. I defied them still, when suddenly a file of boys behind them, loose shot, delivered such a shower of pebbles I was fain to draw mine honour in and let them win the work. The devil was amongst them, I think, surely.
Oh, these are the youths that thunder at a playhouse and fight for bitten apples. There's no audience but the tribulation of Tower Hill or the limbs of Limehouse their dear brothers are able to endure.
Mercy of me, what a multitude are here! They grow still, too, from all parts they're coming, as if we kept a fair here. Where are these porters, those lazy knaves? Ye have made a fine hand, fellows. There's a trim rabble let in. Are all these your faithful friends of the suburbs? They shall have great store of room, no doubt, left for the ladies when they pass back from the christening.
Hey, please, Your Honour, we are but men, and what so many may do, not being torn to pieces, we have done. An army cannot rule them.
As I live. If the king blame me for it, I'll lay ye all by the heels and suddenly, and on your heads clap round fines for neglect. Ye are lazy knaves. And here ye lie, baiting of bombards when ye should do service. Hark, the trumpets sound. They're come already from the christening. Go, break among the press and find a way out to let the troop pass fairly. Or I'll find a marshalsea, so hold ye play these 2 months.
Wait, where are they for the princess?
Oh, you great fellow, stand close up or I'll make your head ache.
You on the cabinet, get up on the rail or I'll peg you on the pails out.
Heaven, from thy endless goodness, send prosperous life, long and ever happy, to the high and mighty Princess of England, Elizabeth.
And to your royal grace and the good queen, my noble partners and myself, thus pray. All comfort, joy in this most gracious lady.
Heaven ever laid up to make parents happy may hourly fall upon ye.
Thank you, good Lord Archbishop. What is her name?
Elizabeth.
With this kiss, take my blessing. God protect thee, into whose hand I give thy life.
Amen. This royal infant, heaven still move about her. Though in her cradle, yet now promises upon this land a thousand, thousand blessings, which time shall bring to ripeness. She shall be, but few now living can behold that goodness, a pattern to all princes living with her and all that shall succeed. Truth shall nurse her. Holy and heavenly thoughts still counsel her. She shall be loved and feared. Her own shall bless her, her foes shake like a field of beaten corn and hang their heads with sorrow. Good grows with her. In her days every man shall eat in safety under his own vine what he plants and sing the merry song of peace to all his neighbors. God shall be truly known, and those about her from her shall read the perfect ways of honor. And by those claim their greatness, not by blood. Nor shall this peace sleep with her. But as when the bird of wonder dies, the maiden phoenix, her ashes new create another heir, who from the sacred ashes of her honor shall star-like rise, as great in fame as she was. Wherever the bright sun of heaven shall shine, his honor and the greatness of his name shall be and make new nations. He shall flourish, and like a mountain cedar, reach his branches to all the plains about him. Our children's children shall see this and bless heaven.
Amen. Thou speakest wonders.
She shall be, to the happiness of England, an aged princess. Many days shall see her, and yet no day without a deed to crown it. Would I had known no more. But she must die. She must. The saints must have her. Yet a virgin, a most unspotted lily, shall she pass to the ground, and all the world shall mourn her.
O Lord Archbishop, thou hast made me now a man. Never before this happy child did I get anything. This oracle of comfort has so pleased me that when I am in heaven, I shall desire to see what this child does and praise my Maker. I thank ye all. To you, my good Lord Mayor, and your good brethren, I am much beholding. I have received much honor by your presence, and ye shall find me thankful. Lead the way, lords. Ye must all see the Queen, and she must thank ye. She will be sick else. This day no man think has business at his house, for all shall stay. This little one shall make it holiday.
In Henry VIII by William Shakespeare and John Fletcher. King Henry was played by Matthew Marsh, Queen Catherine by Yolanda Vasquez, Cardinal Wolsey by Patrick Malahide, Thomas Cranmer by Adam Godley, the Duke of Norfolk by Joseph Mydell, and the Duke of Suffolk by Stuart Macquarie. Paul Ryder was the Duke of Buckingham and Thomas Cromwell, Stephen Critchlow, Lord Abergenny, the Earl of Surrey, and the Porter, Gunnar Cawthrey, the Duke of Buckingham Surveyor and the Bishop of Winchester, and Chris Pavlow, the Lord Chamberlain and Cardinal Capucius. Cardinal Campaeus and the Lord Chancellor were played by Jonathan Taffler, Sir Thomas Lovell, Griffith and the Porter's Man by Dan Starkey. Anne Boleyn was played by Donla Hughes, and the Old Lady by Anne Beach. Other parts were played by Jill Cardo, Robert Lonsdale, Manjeet Mann, Inar Mirza, and Malcolm Tierney. Technical presentation was by Martha Littlehales, Colin Guthrie, and Jenny Burnett. The tabor and pipe were played by Bill Tuck, and the dancers were coached by Barbara Siegel. Henry VIII was adapted for radio and directed by Jeremy Mortimer.
And our drama on three next week is The Physicists by Friedrich Dürrenmatt. And all our dramas on three are available to listen to online for 30 days after broadcast. At 12:30 tonight, we'll be joining John Shea for Through the Night. Until then, let's stay in England for music by Elgar. Vernon Handley conducts the London Philharmonic Orchestra in the Introduction and Allegro for Strings, Opus 47.
Thank you.
The introduction and allegro for strings by Edward Elgar. It was played by the London Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Vernon Handley. Tonight's prom at 7.30 will be given by the Leipzig Gewandhaus Orchestra, conducted by Herbert Blomstedt. It's an all-Beethoven programme with Andras Schiff, the soloist in the Emperor Concerto, Leonora Overture No. 2 and the Seventh Symphony. That's all here on BBC Radio 3. We're on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and online. It's 12:30.
I'm John Shea, and welcome again to BBC Radio 3 Through the Night. 6 hours of music making from all around Europe, and today that includes a Brahms piano sonata in just over 45 minutes, with one of Nielsen's symphonies to follow. Today's opening concert is from the 2015 Cantar di Pietre Festival in Italian-speaking Switzerland. Ensemble Studium perform 13th and 14th century music dedicated to the Virgin Mary. It's from the Las Huelgas Codex, a musical manuscript from the monastery of that name in northern Spain. This first sequence begins with a lament, probably written on the death of the abbess in 1335. Then comes a setting of Rorate Caeli, words from the Book of Isaiah.